All right, everyone. So here we are, and I am very excited because joining us today is one of the most iconic players in the history of Survivor. You know him from Token Sheens, Heroes vs. Villains, and South Pacific. It's Coach Wade. Coach, how are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you guys doing?
We're doing quite well. Dom, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. I'm glad to be doing this. As Coach said, it's almost midnight in England now, but very excited to be here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as am I. I know we have a lot of stuff to get to today. And Coach, just before we get into all of that, if there's any time in here that there's anything you want to clarify or set the record straight on, that's really what we are very open to. Because the goal here really is getting your own, in your own words, like the most accurate view of your time spent playing Survivor. So if at any point we have any kind of like false assumptions or the TV editing may have been misleading, please do not hesitate to let us know.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah, so I'm curious how much of a fan you were of the show or of the game itself prior to playing and how you ended up actually getting cast.
So I was not a fan at all of the show. In fact, if you go back to the first season, I had just gotten through kayaking 6,000 miles down to Colombia from San Felipe, California, a trip that's been well documented, and there's a couple of books out about that. One of them is called No Turning Back, and the other one is called Voyage Beyond Reason. One is in my own words, and the other one is kind of taken as a third party. And so I had just gotten back from that trip. This was back in, I took that trip in 1996, 1997, went down the Amazon in 98. And so anyway, I got this email from somebody that I knew down in L.A., and they said, listen, they're starting the show. It's called Survivor. They're looking for candidates. I think you'd be great for this. I know somebody that's in casting. You should apply for the show. So I got really excited. I think this was like in 2000 or 99 when they were filming it or whenever they started it. And so I thought, yeah, you know, sounds good. Let me check it out. And so I started looking at it and kind of just turned down the opportunity. I mean, that's pretty stupid on my part, but I just looked at it like it wasn't real surviving. And so I thought, yeah, you know what? I'm going to just not apply for this. So, you know, I kind of boycotted the show in the early years thinking, oh, I could have been on that, but I didn't. You know, I didn't go through with it. Mm-hmm. And then it became such a big deal that I thought, well, maybe I should try to see what it's all about. My problem then was getting in the Survivor at just a random episode at a random point in time during the season, which everybody knows you can't do that. So I tried to watch an episode here and there, and I just could never get into it because I didn't know really what was going on. So I was not a fan of the show. So I'm going to kind of go full circle on this story because everybody knows Coach likes to tell stories. So I'll wrap this all up in a nice neat package with a red bow on top and deliver it to both of you guys. But so now let's fast forward. It's 2007. I'm a very successful NCAA university soccer coach, enjoying life, not thinking about reality TV whatsoever. And now the girls that I was coaching, they were like, Coach, you know, when are you going to get married? And I said, oh, I don't know. I like being a bachelor. So they got this idea to send me, to submit me on The Bachelor. They've got a questionnaire form that you can fill online. Unbeknownst to me, the girls put out my picture, sent in the casting people at Bachelor, a long list of credentials of why I would make the next Bachelor. And so I get this email one day, and it's from somebody, I guess, for Bachelor saying, hey, your soccer players did this. You look like a very interesting guy. You're not really what we're looking for, which I took great offense to that because I thought I was the overall ladies' man, but apparently not. And so, you know, I took offense to that, but they said, but you know, a show that we could be great for is Survivor. Here's the application. Go for it. It's not the same casting people. They were not connected. I did not have an inside track. But they did kind of get my mind thinking. And I thought, you know what? Why not? I'm always a big believer in fate and opportunities that open up and doors that open. And I've always been pretty diligent of kicking down those doors and jumping in with both feet, see where fate leads me. So I, you know, did my application. I didn't even know Survivor, and so they're asking, like, what is your favorite applicant? And the deadline was coming up pretty quick, so they said, who is your favorite contestant? And so I looked online on CBS.com and started looking up profiles of people. It was season 17 that was going on, and so then I clicked to a back season of Fans versus Favorites, and I'm clicking through the profiles, and I see this guy with long blonde hair, surfer guy, kind of looking, and I thought, man, I guess that's who I would be, you know, just not even knowing. So I wrote down his name. His name was Eric Reichenbach, the ice cream scooper from Michigan.
Sure.
Totally opposite of who I'd be playing, but, it, you know, the question is, who do you think you'd most play the game like? So I wrote down this guy's name. So I put, you know, and so I fill it out. I do this application, this video. I wish I had it because I posted on YouTube. It was pretty funny. It was, at that time, it was pretty classic Coach where I'm like, hey, this is Coach Wade. I'm a university soccer coach. And then it shows 30 seconds of me on the soccer field. And then I was like, I'm also a symphony conductor. Show 30 seconds of that. And I said, and you know, I used to be a professional kayaker, and it showed 30 seconds of Fox or CBS News or something like that, CNN, back when I was doing those big kayak trips. And so I wrapped it all up, and I said, never met anybody like me. I'm about to get this phone call. You know, this is such and such from SEG Cast. You apply for a show called Survivor. And one of the first times in my life, I just got shit-scared nervous. You know, it's just like, holy crap. I was so nervous. I was short of breath on the phone. And they were saying, you know, are you still interested? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. So she said, well, let me ask you about yourself. And they had done a bunch of research because the first thing they thought is this guy is just totally full of it. You know, there's too many accomplishments. So they went out and they checked a lot of stuff. And, you know, it was cool. So she already knew about it, but she wanted to hear it from me. And I guess her casting director kept saying, you know, is this guy for real? This guy's not for real. You got to find out if he's for real. So they started asking me questions, what I did, that kind of stuff. And then they asked me this question, which plagued me through casting the entire time. After they started hearing my voice, hearing how I would play the game, everybody would ask me. And it was something that they kind of got hung up on a little bit because I would never really come clean because I thought it would be a big strike against me if I said I never watched the show. And so they would ask me, what, why did you put down Eric Reichenbach as the player that you would most resemble? And I was like, oh, you know, because, you know, he's a surfer guy, good looking, athletic, long hair. They were like, okay, and did you see what happened to him? And I was like, oh, yeah, of course. And they were like, well, that's nothing like how we think that you would play. So it's kind of funny because it's this running joke on me. Although I didn't just come out and say, all right, you know what, I never watched the damn show, I just selected them. Although that probably would have been even funnier and it would have answered that question. But I kind of hemmed it on and they said, well, we'll call you back. And sure enough, they called me back and then I, you know, flew out to finals casting and I got some great stories from finals casting, but I probably we need to go on to the next subject. But let me just say that there were some moments in Survivor casting that they still talk about that. They tell contestants coming in, you want to get noticed, this is what you do. This is the kind of stuff you need to do. This is how Coach rolled into casting and made everybody recognize. It had to do with samurai robes and, you know, hair up and a top knot and all kinds of stuff. I was already playing the game then, although I didn't know it. Now, coming back and circling to your question, I was not a fan at that time, but as soon as they called me the first time, I had Netflix and I started going on Netflix and I started renting full seasons of Survivor so I could get into it. And man, once I watched my first full season in one night, you know, 13 episodes back to back to back to back to back, I was totally hooked. I don't miss an episode now. In fact, I get ticked off if I watch the show on Thursday recorded versus watching it on Wednesday night. I want to watch it, you know, with my wife on Wednesday night. As soon as it comes out. I absolutely love the show. I think it is one of the, if not the greatest social, mental, physical experiences known to mankind on the planet. And it's just a phenomenal, phenomenal adventure.
Absolutely. And I do not know that we could have asked for much more from our first answer in the coach interview. And so now I'm curious, you mentioned this idea about we see a lot of people, I think, go out there talking about going for the experience rather than, you know, for the $1 million or for the fame or whatever. And I was actually somewhat curious about the idea of your initial reaction is that the show perhaps kind of trivializes the concept of actual adventure to real adventure going people, adventure seekers like yourself. So what ultimately, you know, falling in love with the show, I guess notwithstanding, changed your mind to get you to really say yes and go out? Was it just the idea of this is a fated situation where I'm finally getting another shot at this?
You know, I think that there were so many reasons why I wanted to do it. But the first and foremost, it was a chance of a lifetime. And I knew that. And there was a little back and forth where I didn't know if I was going to do it or not. When they said that I was going to be on it, that's another story for another day. But you know, the pure adventure of it was appealing to me, even though it was not the survivor that I thought I was 10 years prior. It appealed to me on a lot of different levels. I never thought about $1 million. Of course, hey, that'd be nice. But when you're going out there in that environment and the kind of person that I am, I was pretty lucky to get to the end and almost win the last time I played. But you know, chances of that happening again are pretty nil. It's a game that, you know, requires a lot of luck, a lot of skill. You got to be at the right place at the right time, be on the right drive. There's just so many variables. But going out that first time, a big part of it was the adventure. A big part of it, though, is that I have a motto that I tell the soccer players, and it's with self-discipline comes success, because the pain of regret is far greater than the pain of discipline. And, you know, for me, I've really tried to live my life without any regrets. And that's one of the things, you know, that I knew I would always regret, seeing that new cast come out for season 18 and realizing that I didn't want to be in that situation. It's the same reason why I said yes to Survivor 23, even though they called me a week and a half before I was supposed to ship out. It wasn't good timing for me, but I just thought, you know what? You've got to take this opportunity when it comes.
Oh, very interesting. I'm sure when we talk about South Pacific, we'll be returning to that, because we are very much curious about your response to after getting to see your seasons air time after time. But just going back to the beginning of Token Sheens here, when you were actually, you know, out there really in Brazil for the first time, or not for the first time for you, but for the game itself, what was going through your head as the game was about to start? Because presumably, you know, the $1 million is an afterthought, but you probably don't want to be one of the first ones gone, right?
Yeah, but I mean, being one of the first ones gone, I never really considered that. You know, I never really thought that that was a possibility. When I first stepped out on the sand dune, with the scrub grass all around and the stark trees were kind of framing our drop off point for the truck. We got dropped off. I was thinking the whole time when we got dropped off and I saw all the cameras, I was just like, oh my goodness, this is a little bit bigger than me. You know, it really kind of hits you that, wow, this is not, you know, two camera guys filming with a couple of grips and producers. This is a full blown 300 people working behind the scenes kind of action show. And so it really hit me then, you know, that I was like, wow, this big time. I'm a small part of it. But, you know, I knew, especially at that time, you know, I was a very highly driven and motivated soccer coach in the NCAA. And when you're a coach at that level, you're always right. You are the best. Because if you're not, somebody else is going to be better than you. And you always have to convey that source of strength to the soccer players that you coach. You can't say, hey, you know, I think so we should run a 4-3-3 today because I kind of like it, and it might be, I think it's a pretty good formation, and I think that you know, might be able to play well in it because I have coached for a couple of years. No, you say we're running a 4-3-3 because I studied the system in France when they ran it on, you know, European championships this year, and I think I'm, you know, you really have to sell it. So I kind of came in with that really high type A personality that's never wrong, and you can see that through the whole season. And I didn't think about getting voted off first. What I thought about was making friends and having an adventure of a lifetime together with this bond that's forged with these people that you're going to experience this once in a lifetime adventure. And so I really, that was what I was thinking about when we got into our tribes. And of course I was thinking, you know, I don't want to get on the bad side of anybody, but I just kind of did my thing. You know, in the very beginning, I would piss people off, and I wasn't too worried about it because I bonded with some people really quick, Tyson and Debbie and Jerry and kind of Brendan and Sierra, you know, and it was just like we bonded so quick off the bat that I knew that I was going to be pretty safe.
All right. So you talked about really wanting to experience the adventure of it, but at the same time, it's not just like you're off on a camping trip with a bunch of friends. You are immersed in what is essentially a game with a bunch of strangers. And so one of the questions you have to ask yourself going in is, how am I going to approach this game? And one theme we saw from you early and often was, well, I want to play this game in a new way. I want to make it about finding out at the end with strong players rather than just taking people to the end so that I can beat them. At what point did that really become your philosophy going in?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm really lucky that I got cast because I didn't have a clue when I was going through casting exactly what I was going to do. You know, in casting, I was doing the old cop-out. Oh, you know, I'm going to take some strong, some weak. I'm going to, you know, tell the truth to some people and tell the, you know, and lie to other people. And, I mean, really, I went through casting kind of thinking that as a character, because of the force of my personality, I was going to be safe. But I was just going to play the game like everybody else. It wasn't until after casting, and I started watching, I watched like 10 people in 2 weeks. And I started seeing people do the same things over and over again. Taking the weakest player with, being sneaky, not being overtly a preacher of honor and integrity. And I thought to myself, I want to do things different because I always want to put my spin on something. But when I coach soccer, I take a bunch of different personalities and mold them into a formation and a style of play that other people play, but then I put my spin on it. When we play something with a symphony, I listen to examples of the recordings online, and then I say to myself, okay, now we're going to make it our own. I'm going to put my spin on it. So there was always a point where I wanted to put this coach's spin on it. And, you know, I thought to myself, how can I do that? And so, you know, as I was flying down there, I was thinking to myself, what do I want to do? And how am I going to be able to do it different than anybody else? And that's kind of where I came up with this shtick of, I'm going to be this warrior that goes out there and competes against the best. And when I hit the beach, I started thinking, hey, I need to take the strongest to the end because that's honor. And I started researching, you know, before I went, seven layers of Viking heaven, you know, the samurai and how they seek honor and defeat instead of victory. And then I just kind of thought in my own terms with my soccer team. If my university went out and played a high school team and beat them 20-0 because they were weak, what fun is that? That's not fun at all. But if we tie, you know, the fifth-ranked team in the nation 1-1 and it's back and forth, or we even lose that game in overtime, I'd much rather coach a game like that. And so it had some real practicality to it. But I really developed it right before the show started, and then it was like, you know what, this is who I'm going to be, and once I made that decision that that's how I was going to play, nothing was going to deter me from that.
I think when a lot of people hear you say stuff like that, their immediate reaction is, oh, well, coach isn't playing to win. But maybe it's more accurate to say, do you think that you're playing to win on your own terms? Because like, when you say you want to take the strongest to the end, no one who thinks that they themselves are weak is going to say that. You only say that if you think that you're strong, right? That you embody those values that you want to see in other people.
Exactly. But I will say this. I'm going to give you something that I have not given anybody else, and that is this. When I first went out there, I was scared, just like on that first phone call. I didn't know what I was doing. Yeah, I know how to survive, but as far as, like, interacting with people that are not my players or my musicians, so I'm not automatically appointed coach, I was scared to death. I'm not a young guy anymore. You know, I worked out prior to the show all wrong. I lifted heavy weights and did an hour of cardio instead of doing sprints, mental exercises. I was in way over my head. And so when you're in way over your head in something and you're scared, what do? You act tough. You act like nothing's going to faze you. It's the people that act that way that are usually the most sensitive inside. It's the people that act the most arrogant that are probably on the inside the most, the most, not only the most scared, but also the most complex, intimidated, low self-esteem. So I'm not saying that I had low self-esteem coming in, but I knew that going into Survivor, with everybody talking about it on the beach, oh, well, on day 36, there's loved ones. I didn't put that together. Well, it usually goes reward, day off, community challenge. I knew that these people were so far superior to me in their knowledge of Survivor that it was going to be a little bit of an uphill battle. I had faith in myself. I had faith that I would be a good competitor, but I didn't think I was going to be the best competitor. I didn't think I was going to be out there winning challenge punch, right? And so that was part of it. I wanted to bring the best because, yeah, I thought I brought a lot to the table, but I also wanted to bring the best just because I knew that bringing weak people, to me, there was no honor in that. And as soon as I was out there the first day, I realized that to me, this was life. This was not a game, and that's how I was going to play.
So that feeling of, scaredness, when did that start to change for you, and when did you really feel like you had found some footing within the game? Or within your tribe, even, meeting,
I got to tell you that it really, doing those challenges, the first challenge, it was 122 degrees that first day. Jeff said that. He was like, you don't think this is for real? This is temperature. We did that first challenge. I went over those first four sand dune hills, and I about blacked out. It was crazy. I was like, holy cow, I'm in way over my head. And so, my asthma started kicking off and for me physically, I was really disappointed in myself that first time. And let's circle back on that when we start talking about heroes and villains. But, I was really disappointed in myself physically because I realized, hey, you're not this 21-year-old like JT and Joe and Tyson and those kind of guys. I didn't have that. And so, I felt comfortable when we voted off Candace. I knew that I had the tribe thinking the same way as I did, or at least I was in the majority for that moment. But it wasn't until we did this one. It was called the Flying Pig Challenge. It was when you tie up these stakes and the other team has to throw these pigs through it, and the people that have the most pigs win, and then the reward was going out and having hamburgers and going to the beautiful waterfall. And, it was at that challenge that I finally felt like I really contributed. And so that was really cool. It was kind of then the physically that I said, okay, these guys are getting more tired. My body's used to fasting because I used to fast every year. Plus, I'd been out in the bush and slept great periods of time on the ground, and so that didn't affect me as much as it affected the other people. In fact, the doctors would routinely remark in each season that the longer I stayed out there, the better physically I became when everybody around me was becoming weaker. And so I think that that kind of allowed me to get my foot in the door, so to speak. And so it was really after about 2 weeks, 10 to 14 days, where I really started feeling like, yeah, I've got a place in the tribe, and yeah, I'm at least not embarrassing myself at the challenge.
Yeah, okay, that's fantastic. Now, I think one of the things that might have been an issue for you that you yourself have hit on is this idea of being the coach or being the maestro who people are going to listen to you and must listen to you for the good of the entire group. And in Survivor, that's not always necessarily the case. And we saw some kind of conflict early between you and Brendan as far as being the leader goes, and then not so much getting along, not Sierra and Aaron not taking too well to your coaching techniques, I guess is one way to put it. Do you feel like maybe those are just some examples, but in general, that this is something that was hard for you to overcome in the beginning? And do you think that as, you know, in Heroes versus Villains and in South Pacific, this is something, an aspect that you got much better at?
You know, I mean, this could be a very long answer. You can cut me off whenever you want to, but, you know, this is a very complex question and answer that I probably won't know all of the answers to that question for a long time. And in fact, I'd probably have to come out of retirement, even though I said I would retire permanently from the game of Survivor. I'd have to come out of retirement and play it a fourth time, really, to have the right answer for this. I would have no idea how to answer this question except for now that I have a perspective of three different seasons. So, when I first went out there, right before we left, casting made a huge mistake. I'm sure that person got fired, and they emailed all of us on the same email. So we all saw each other's emails. And if I'd known now what I know then, I would have saved those emails, started emailing those people to try to get pregame alliances. Casting immediately called us, said, you got this email, please delete it, you're on your honor. You know, if you contacted any players, you're done. But on that email was Brendan had an email. So a lot of people, Emily123, you're not going to guess who that is, but Brendan sent it and whatever. And so people were Googling. So they Google his name and they see this Bare Naked Granola owner. They automatically think Bare Naked Granola, he lives in Colorado, he's going to be the authority on surviving in the wilderness. So when we first got out there, you know, I'm more than happy to sit back and let other people take charge, like I did in Hero the Villain, letting Boss Rob kind of take charge of camp life and whatnot. But when I see that there's a need, I want to step up. And I think one of the most frustrating things that you can find as a leader is if you know how to do something better than somebody else, and yet nobody's listening to you. So we got out there the first day, and Brendan was like, all right, let's build a shelter like this. And he had us sleeping with the tilt upside down, but our head was down below our feet, which everybody knows is going to give you migraines when you wake up in the morning because your blood's going to all rush to your head. And he had the roof slanted down so that it was near our heads instead of near our feet. And I was like, hey, don't you think we should do this? And the tribe was like, no, Brendan knows what he's doing. Let's do it this way. And then, so we ended up building the shelter 3 times, which you don't want to do when you don't have nutrients out there. We rebuilt the fire pit 3 times. I said, hey, why don't we do this? They said, no. So, I mean, that was frustrating to go through that experience and to know that I could have saved everybody a lot of time and effort in the first place. So I think that was part of it. It was frustrating with the bean situation. Everybody's always made a big deal about the bean situation. Really funny. I caught a lot of flack for that. My parents met at a restaurant. They cook. That's one of their passions. I cook. I love to cook ethnic foods. And everybody knows that you cook rice for 25 minutes and you cook raw beans. Well, first of all, you soak them overnight and then you cook them for like 4 hours. And if you remember, Jerry got voted off, but he asked to go home because he had severe acid reflux. And the bottom line was, he could not digest the beans the way that we were cooking them. And what they wanted to do was get one big pot because it saved time. They wanted to throw the beans and the rice in, and after 30, 45 minutes, the rice would be overcooked, the beans were still hard, and our bodies could not break down those beans in the way that they were. And so I said, look, guys, this is how we're going to do it. And it became a huge issue because at that exact same time, thunderstorm came, blew out the fire, and instead of everybody enjoying overcooked rice and undercooked beans, we didn't have anything. And everybody called it selfish, which in hindsight, it was. And that's a battle. If I went back on again, then I would want to fight. You know, in college soccer, working under different administrations, you learn what battles to choose to fight. And I realized that going out there on Survivor, I picked a lot of battles that I really should pick to try to fight. Now, I will say something else. I really felt like I learned by watching myself that first season, saying, you know what? you got to remember, in regular society, you can't always be right. You can't always perceive to be right. And people will see that as arrogant. So I really changed my tack going into the next piece, saying, if I think that somebody needs to be the leader, I'll step in and be the leader, if they're receptive. But I'm going to meet them where they're at, knowing that maybe some people are out there for $1 million. Some people are out there for the adventure. Some people are out there for fame. I want to figure out what each person needs, and then I'm going to meet them where they're at. And I think that was very critical and key part of my strategy going into the 2013 season.
Definitely. Now, I think if we want to skip ahead a little bit here, it's that when you get to the merge now in Token Sheens, the Timbira tribe is in fact actually up numbers, and especially they were up 6-4, and then when Joe gets taken out medically, you guys were then up 6-3, but there wasn't so much of a cohesive unit, and it seemed like this was a situation where all of you were now kind of rushing over to JT and Steven and Taj, trying to get them to basically come and join up with you to pick off the other Timbiras. And the big coup we see hatched is on Brendan. So do you want to kind of take us through this and the motivations behind that?
Yeah, well, in doing so, we've got to go back to day one. Day one, I'm looking at Brendan. I know who he is. And I know that he could be a very strong personality and the kind of person that I would want to play the game. Young, good-looking, strong, good at challenges. And so I immediately went to him on that hike into camp and said, Brendan, I want to play this game. I've been watching you, and let's play this game together. Iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. And Brendan was like, yeah, okay, it might be a little bit too early for that. Whatever, coach, I'll let you know. And he didn't really say that, but he did say, okay, sure. But I knew by his reaction that he wasn't in. And it pissed me off because I thought, this is the kind of guy. You know, if Tyson, myself, and Brendan would have been able to form an early true warrior alliance, it would have been broken and we would have been sitting in the final three. And we could have had Debbie as a fourth and, you know, Sierra as a fifth, et cetera, et cetera. Brendan was too stupid to realize that fate was looking him in the face that first day. And just like Jonathan Penner in this last season, that when approached saying, hey, this is what, you know, we want to do. We want to go to the final four with you. Penner says, I got to think about it. So, you know, much like Penner screwed himself, Brendan screwed himself. And when we got to the merge, I didn't trust him. I didn't like Sierra. I didn't like Aaron. And so we came in as this fractured group, something that I worked hard to create the opposite of in the 23rd season. I preached to those people every day. This is the five. This is the five. This is the six. If you stay true to your alliance, you know, and I'm sure we're going to get into that later, but it was really a critical part of the success of that 23rd season when Albert would go out and start making deals with other people just to kind of hedge his bets. And everybody in my alliance would say, what's he doing? So people would say, I'm sick and tired of Albert. What's he doing? Why is he doing that? And then when, you know, Sophie would have her meltdown, be socially awkward, not talk to anybody. And then Brendan and other people would come to me and Brandon and Albert would say, hey, you know, what's going on with Sophie? I would say, calm down. This is the group. Don't worry about it. This is who we're going to trust. And so I really worked hard to make sure that we were not a fractured group going into the merge. Back to Token Sheens, we were so fractured, I didn't trust Brandon. I'd already given him the olive branch, and he said no, that I had no choice but to see what would happen in the merge. If I didn't like JT and Steven so much, Steven, because he had such a great wit and conversations, were finally not about what restaurants people liked, what, you know, what clothes they wore and what places they shopped at. Finally, it was about, you know, real life and poetry. And so I love Steven for that. And I love JT because he's just an all around good old country boy. And so I like those two. Had I not liked those two, I wouldn't have gone with them, much like I didn't care to align with Taj and everybody else. So that's what happened going into the merge. I realized that it was, you know, a great story that the three tempura, or excuse me, the three jalapao outlasted the eight tempura, and that was a great story. And it was. You know, they had no choice but to get together, and we dashed ourselves on their rock. But if I had to do it differently, I wouldn't have done it differently, because if I hadn't done that, I would have been one that got voted out.
Yeah. Do you think that it was always going to be difficult to play the way that you said you wanted to, like taking strong players to them? Because usually the instinct of those same strong players who tend to be, you know, the alpha males is to immediately go after the other people who are seen as strong. So, like, even if you wanted Brendan there at the end, it was always going to be against his will, if you like.
Well, I think that, you know, the alpha male who is always a target, either early on after a few challenges have been won and they're looking towards the merge, or after the merge, when they lose a challenge, they're immediately a target. I can be the alpha male, but because I'm not quite so dominating in challenges, I can still be there, because everybody knows that I've tried to take on the leadership mantle from the very beginning, that you know, that they know that if they get to the end that they can beat, at least that's what they're thinking. So I actually think that I'm a pretty safe player to play with. I don't go back on my word unless it's a case where I feel like I'm threatened or I feel like I've been lied to. I don't go back on my word. I'm a pretty straight up player. I try to play the game like it's real life. And I'm not the most dominating player in challenges, and yet I want to be the leader. And I'll be the leader if you want me to be. So to me, you know, I think I'm a pretty safe player to play with. But I think that in Heroes and Villains, people saw that. A lot of the heroes side did talk to me saying, really, I want to play the game with you. And same as the villain side. It was really kind of a fluke that I got thrown up at the last minute and got voted out of Heroes and Villains. As far as me wanting to take other alpha males or other strong players at the end, again, it goes back to that old philosophy that I want to beat the best, and I want to try to beat the best.
Okay, because I think a lot of people would agree that wanting to beat the best is a noble ambition, but for them, beating the best involves, like, lasting longer than them in the challenge or voting them out at tribal council, whereas for you it seems to involve something a lot more committal than that, like taking them to the end and going up against them in a jury vote. And Jeff seemed to point out what I guess seemed to him to be a tension in that philosophy, where after Brendan's voted out, where he said, look, you said you wanted to take the strong players to the end, and now Brendan's sitting there on the jury and people like Sierra and Aaron are still in the game.
Well, you know, I mean, it's not nothing is impossible, but obviously it's very difficult to get to the end, be the alpha male, make decisions for people to go home, get to the end with other strong candidates and then try to win. But it's not impossible. Is it a foolish strategy for some? It would be, yes. You know, but it also depends on the jury. You know, for me, I really think most people thought that I won season 23. For me, it was interesting. So I looked at the jury the other night and thought to myself, if I had had that jury, I would have won. When I look at Boston Rob's jury, I think if I would have had that jury, I would have won. When I looked at season, 24's jury with Jim winning, I thought if I would have had that jury, I would have won. And so, you know, it's that gamble that you have to take to go out there, even though, yes, it's, you know, the best quote-unquote strategy to take the game to the end. It's just a strategy that I never see myself.
All right. I think the Brendan boot also, at least as it was presented in the story, Brendan served as the head of the dragon for this analogy that basically served as a long-term story arc for your entire career playing Survivor. Is this really where you think you became, you transitioned from coach to the dragon slayer within the game after this Brendan boot?
That was funny. Hey, it was a funny day. You know, the producers were trying to get me to say that I was going against my strategy of taking the strongest at the end. And so I was trying to defend my decision, because they were like, well, obviously you don't want to take the strongest at the end because you're trying to vote out Brendan. And I was like, listen, you know, and then I gave the example of, I think it made it, either made it to the air or it made it to a deleted scene on GPS. But I sat there and I said, listen, Duke Koo Kim, who was a middleweight boxer, wrote on his lampshade the night before he met Boom Boom Mancini in the ring back in the 80s, kill or be killed. Ironically enough, he sustained head injuries enough so that he actually was killed in the ring. But he wrote on his lampshade, kill or be killed. And I told him it would be foolish for me to not think that this guy is gunning for me and that I need to strike first before he strikes me. And they were like, okay, yeah. But they wanted more. And so that's when it became, I just made it up on the spot. There is no Japanese samurai proverb. I just made it up. I said, okay, here's one for you. There's a Japanese samurai proverb that says, if you want to defeat the army and win the war, you've got to cut off the head of the dragon. Brendan is the dragon. Brendan is that dragon. And so when I said that, the producer said, so if you slay him, then you are the dragon slayer. And I was like, no. They were like, yeah. And it was a great moment because I remember sitting there talking to them and them saying, you know, yeah, but if you slay the dragon, that makes you the dragon slayer. And I was like, finally, I was like, call me whatever you want. Coach Wade, you know, Coach Wade is the dragon slayer. And that's where that name was born. And it was really cool. You know, when you're out there, you got nothing to do. You've got 1 hour of challenge a day. On the off days, it's just so painful because in society, we're used to talking on the phone, texting, getting on the computer, driving to the store, going shopping, interacting with our friends, doing our job. We have so much mental stimuli in a normal day that when you go out there and you've got nothing, you don't even have a pen and paper to write your thoughts on, you know, you go a little bit stir crazy. So I'm an eccentric kind of person. And those producers saw that, and in their brilliance, they wanted to expand the eccentricities that I already had to exist. And so when they said Dragon Slayer, and I finally, at first I said no, then I was like, okay, fine. You want to call me the Dragon Slayer, I'll be the Dragon Slayer. And then it created this beautiful fantasy world of the wizard and the warrior. And, you know, it was basically just me trying to find some type of poetry out there and some type of fantasy that I could engage in, and it was definitely a theme that, you know, started, and it went throughout, and, you know, you saw the scene on CBS.com before the final episode of this last season, where they named the final challenge Dragon Slayer, and Kurohara was out there saying it was named after, you know, one of my favorite contestants, Coach Ben Way, the Dragon Slayer. You know, it's a great honor. It was done as a lark and a whim, and have that name kind of stick through. It was cool, you know, and it's something that you don't see on the show. I mean, who nicknames themselves something that outlandish? It's pretty cool. Other people have nicknamed themselves, but that was one that I just felt was really cool to kind of stick with it the whole time.
Right, and this persona really culminated in your trip to Exile Island, which I imagine you'll have a lot to say about if you want to get into that.
Let's talk about Exile.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is, of course, one of probably the highlight, maybe it's too bold to say the highlight of the season, but quite a compelling scene is your time out spent out on Exile. You were the last person, I believe, of the season, and it was your first experience on Exile. And this is, I think you took what you described as like a monastic approach, no food, no water, no anything. So what went into that kind of idea, and how did you end up, describe that experience for us, I guess.
I will give you guys my hats off because you're obviously really students of the game, and so I appreciate that. I did use those exact words. You know, again, I'm going into a situation that I'm not comfortable with. I you know, when I've traveled in the wild, I've had shelter, I've had fire, and I didn't want to go to Exile. Everybody was coming back from Exile talking about how, you know, how horrible it was and how scared they were. And there was an anaconda that was close by. And there was a bunch of big cats. And, you know, I'm a fool, but I'm not that foolish to just think, oh, I'm going to just go off willy-nilly and everything's going to be peachy king. So, you know, I was thinking about that possibility. And this is true. in the Chinese and the Japanese culture, they have something called facing the midnight sun. And it's basically taking what you're afraid of and spinning it around and making it your comfort zone, making it what you can put around you at night and snuggle next to that's going to make you feel like you're okay. And I did that. I took this terrifying, lonely experience and turned it into one of the most greatest experiences of my life. And I've done a lot of things. And, you know, I thought to myself, I want to do it different than anybody's done it, but I also want to make it my rock, what I'm afraid of. And so to go out there and take that monastic approach, you know, there were so many reasons for that, but I think the biggest thing was is that I wanted to do it different than anybody else. I wanted to put my stamp on that. You know, I want to put my stamp on how you dress. I want to put my stamp on tribal by wearing feathers in my hair. I want to put my stamp on the game by saying I want to take the strongest gift. I want to put my stamp on my character saying I want to play with honor and integrity and talk about it so much that even I, as a fan, watch myself saying, just shut up and don't say those words again, but it's something that I wanted to live by. I wanted to put my stamp on Exile Island. And so when I went out there the first day, the producer that's out there, this one producer with a camera, that's pretty much it. He's in a tent. And, you know, I said, hey, man, how you doing? And he's like, we're not allowed to talk to you. Because, you know, the producers really don't talk to you at all unless they're asking questions. And he says, I'm not supposed to talk to you. I'm like, come on, man, it's just you and me. And he kind of said something under his breath. And I said, well, do you like your job? It's pretty awesome, isn't it? And he says, no, I don't like my job. And I was like, why not? And he was like, because I filmed for 3 days. You know, we get 48 hours of footage, and they show 15 seconds of it. And I smiled, and I looked at him, and I pointed my finger at him, and I said, we're going to change that. And sure enough, you know, that was pretty epic stuff. I mean, listen, a lot of the stuff that I do out there is, you know, partially a character, it's partially the hidden fantasies that I have inside my own mind. But that exile, that was the real deal. And I starved, and I was dying of thirst, and I got down to 149 pounds out there, and I weighed 205 when I went through casting, and I kind of slimmed down a little bit on the show. I think they weighed me at like 188, but I was 149. And a lot of that I lost in exile. You can see a visible difference when you see me before and after. And I still have the clip to be on exile. Before and after the segue over to JT and Steven, I still have that clip, and I still use that clip when I talk about the power of mind when I do public speaking. It was a very powerful moment to go out there to have nothing and pour down rain every night. I felt no shelter. I felt no attempt at starting a fire. I froze my ass off at night. I was shivering, covered in sand that melted up against my face and my whole body because it rained so hard at night, and I would stand up on that staff that I carved and wait for the sun to come over the mountains and give me a modicum of warmth in my body because I was so chilled to the bone. Going out there and doing that and just existing with nature and going exploring every day. You didn't see that. I set out every day for an hour and went in every direction and looked and found swamps and found jungle and found, you know, it was an amazing ecosystem that I want to go back to because it's like no place I've ever been to on Earth. But to do that in that manner and for them to honor what I did by, you know, showing close to 12 minutes of me on Exile was really awesome. And I remember when I watched that for the first time, that was back when CBS flew you to the finale location to do interviews live. So they flew me back. And then I just stayed for the weekend because it was right before the finale weekend. So I flew into New York. I got to the hotel at like 2 o'clock in the morning. My interview started at 6 the next day. One of the people for Survivor that worked for CBS gave me the video of that last episode because I was going to have to, answer questions based on that episode the next morning. And I remember sitting there in my hotel room and putting that DVD into my laptop, queuing up that episode, and when it got to, and when I was watching that, you know, imagine watching that, it's in your normal state, and seeing the torture and the punishment that I put my body through, that when I saw myself hobble into the challenge, I wept for myself to realize that I had pushed myself that much, because when you're in it, you don't realize it. And I wept for myself at the years that I took off my life doing that season the first time and losing close to 60 pounds from September to December, from casting to the end of that show, losing 8 inches of muscle around my chest. And it was a very powerful moment for me to sit there alone in my hotel room and watch my escapades on Egg Cloud. It was one of the most, I think, dramatic episodes in 25 seasons to see me, you know, hobble around on Exile, get off of Exile, almost win the challenge, and then get voted out. You know, it wouldn't have been as poignant if I hadn't been voted out. It wouldn't have been as poignant if I had not starved myself for 3 days. It wouldn't have been so poignant if I weren't out there carving a staff. It wouldn't have been so dramatic had I not come up with a poem that I wanted to read right before, you know, my exit. Just the whole thing worked out in the long run to my advantage, although I was hurt very deeply when they voted me off.
Yeah. You just largely answered this question, I guess, but I'll ask it anyway. How much of your character out there, if you like, was that just a portraying a character for TV, and how much of it was your genuine reaction to what was taking place? Because I think the average viewer looks at it and says, well, this guy, Coach, he's crazy, completely lacking self-awareness. But if you look at it from another perspective, it's like, well, this guy's managed to get himself invited back for 2 seasons, and he turned what, for a lot of people, was a mundane experience, just going to Exile Island, into a 10-minute documentary that dominated an episode. So how much of that was conscious on your part?
Yeah, you know, the thing is that by that point in the game, I was so immersed in the energy of the environment, and I was so immersed in becoming Dragon Slayer, because that was waking up in the morning and being that character. That was my life. At times, stand still when you're out there because you don't have all that stimuli. I took my first kayak trip and I wrote in my journal that every day seemed like a week, every week seemed like a month, and every month seemed like a year. When I got done with those 6 months, it seemed like I'd been gone for 6 years. It's the same kind of thing with Survivor. Time slows down and you either embrace the environment or the environment's going to embrace you. And so by that time, you're not thinking about camera. I'm not. I mean, you totally don't even realize the cameras are there. You know, you enjoy going to your confessional because that time of stimulus during the day where you can talk to somebody almost like a priest and dialogue with what's going on. But, you know, that was 100% me. If I were to go out right now and starve myself and lose a bunch of weight and be out of the wilderness by myself, no cameras around, that's how I would act. I mean, on my first kayak trip, I talked to myself, I sung to myself, I prayed to God, you know, 18 hours a day. I talked to the animals, you know, but that was 4 months into the trip where, again, I had become like Tom Hanks in Castaway, really embracing the animalistic primal being that we all are inside, that we all have gone away from being so pampered in society these days. We all have that primal person on the inside. Everybody that I talk to that says that they can't do Survivor because they couldn't do it, I tell them they're wrong because they have that inside of them that they can tap into. They just don't know it because they haven't been placed in that environment. But what you saw there was 100% authentic.
Do you think that such a reaction might just be limited to people doing it for their first time when the experience is so new to them and maybe not overwhelming might be the wrong word? But did you find that you could still have these kinds of giant moments that your second and third time playing?
That's a great question. This is a great interview, Pat. We'll forget about the hour, man. We just keep on going. We got 2 minutes, so I said I could go, but we're going to stretch it out. These are great questions. It's cool to go through this with you guys because you're obviously really on the ball, and I appreciate that from an interviewed person. there is nothing like your first time. There is nothing like your first time with anything in life. And being out there for that first time and being able to innocently embrace the storyline that these producers are trying to fit you into, it was bliss. And as they say, ignorance is bliss. And when I watched it, I bitterly hurt because I thought that my actions were so noble and I was so upset that I was being made to look a fool in a lot of cases. Although I do feel that the creative arc in that season, if you were to go back and watch that season again, you wouldn't be caught up in the water cooler talk of who is this arrogant asshole. You know, you would actually, you would see something that's more toned down and you wouldn't get the original reaction that you got when you watched it. But you'll see this creative arc of this guy that wants to change the game as iron sharpens iron and then is drugged through the mud. But in the end, you know, I felt like I found redemption with that Exile Island episode. So, you know, it definitely was so beautiful to play it and not worry about the edit. It's beautiful to play it and just be this high, dynamic, trying to be inspirational personality out there, garbage ditch in the environment and in the game itself. Would I have been able to have those experiences on another season, and did I have those experiences, I guess would be a better answer. There's nothing like the first time. Second time was very, very miserable just because nobody wanted to be friends. They just wanted to play the game as hard as possible. They didn't care about shelter. And so an all-star season is definitely tough to do because everybody's in such game mode. So I was really disappointed in the second season. And it could have partially been, you know, just the people I was playing with and playing with Russell and all that kind of stuff. But the third time out there was so beautiful. Being the leader, having people look up to you, listen to what you say. I really had a good time. That second time, and I had beautiful experiences that second time. But I think it was being out by yourself that really caused my eyes to be open. So I did have some similar experiences, but they weren't as poignant just because, A, I wasn't by myself, and B, like you said, I wasn't playing it for the first time.
Okay, so now in this episode, you know, this in the big finale of this episode is when you actually get voted out in fifth place. Now, were you expecting basically that, you know, you had your poem prepared and everything. Was this a blindside for you, or were you kind of knowing this was probably going to be the case?
Oh, no, I had no idea that it was coming. You know, they gave me their word, and I thought that we were playing the game in that way. We weren't going to, you know, we weren't going to do anything like that. And so I was totally blown away. I was totally blindsided. But I will tell you that I came up with that poem, and I thought, I've got to say this poem tonight. And there was a time, and you go back and watch that tribal council, there is a moment where I'm sitting there looking into the fire, leaning on my staff, the Dragon Slayer, which I have in my living room. And I said to myself, before the votes were read, you might be going home tonight. And I remember asking myself, are you okay with that? And that was the moment that I was looking into the fire. And I said to myself, or I thought to myself, yeah, you know what? It's a time, it's a time. Kind of thing.
Okay. So what in the goals that you had kind of set for yourself and your whole kind of game philosophy, how much of your first time playing of what you had hoped you would accomplish do you think you really did accomplish? Like, did you get what you wanted out of the experience, I guess, the first time?
Absolutely. I didn't realize it at the time because, of course, when I got voted out, I was so distraught. And I remember getting choked up talking to a couple of the producers when I just said, I failed you. You know, I failed you because I tried to change this game and I wanted to get to the end with strong players and win it. And I remember them saying, you won the game. This actually came from the top. The executive producer. He said, you won this game. And I was like, what do you mean? I thought, what? And I was like, gonna give me a second chance and go back out there? And he says, you've won this game. He said, you're gonna get more airtime than anybody has ever gotten on Survivor. I just know it. He says, I'm not in charge of the editing, but I can just about guarantee you that you're gonna get more airtime and more confessionals than anybody's ever gotten. And, so that was cool. You know, it was cool to go out there and be a part of a show that's much bigger than the contestants. Carve out this small niche of a character called Coach the Dragon Slayer, and to have my name remembered, echoed in the halls of Survivor forever. To me, in all sincere humility, that's a really big deal, and I'm forever grateful to the producers for telling that story of me being out there trying to find myself as a leader among people who didn't want to be led. And a lot of other things. I wanted to take the strongest to the end. I got pretty close. I wanted to be one of the biggest characters to ever play the game. I think I got pretty close. I wanted to put my stamp on tribal and everyday life and exile. And I think that I did that helpful. So I think that it was definitely a success. I was just disappointed that I didn't make it to the final because I was so close.
What was the public reaction like? Like when they just encountered you on the street or whatever, because I can imagine that the edit that you got on Talking Teens made you into quite a polarizing character.
You know, the general reaction, they always tell you when it's over, enjoy the ride, it's going to be crazy, don't look at blogs because there's, you know, 15 people on a blog site that just have hate for everybody, so don't read the blogs. And of course I did. And the people that were in my life did. And that was really hard for them because they'd get on the blog, say, you know, hey, I know Coach, he's a great guy, and the bloggers just attacked them with such venom that it was pretty tough for them to take. And then I would read the blogs to see what they were saying about me. So I'd go out and defend myself. And it was pretty tough, you know, capitulating with the Amazon story that everybody thought was fake. It was pretty tough to take, especially when you go out there, and I think expectations too were part of it. When I got off the show, and everybody said, well, you know, what you do is fly, you know, cheat like everybody else. Is that what we're going to see? And I told everybody, no, you know what, I played a very honorable game. I didn't fly one time. And so they had that expectation coming in. So it was tough, but as far as the people that I met on the street, you know, they were all just thrilled to meet me, and they all, you know, I never had anybody come up to me and just say, listen, you piece of crap, you know, I hate you. So I didn't really get that. I got a lot of people that really said, wow, you know, I like what you're trying to bring to the game, So that was, I think when it was all said and done and people kind of saw the exile, that change their tune and then seeing the finale, you know, just as a regular guy, I think that also helped. And then, of course, you know, now with Heroes and Villains, then, you know, it was a much different perspective that everybody had on it. I mean, the public reaction, even in the beginning, was pretty, you know, it was pretty powerful. They all said, you know, hey, I don't like what you're bringing to the game, you're a huge character. Don't know if I believe your stories. A lot of times people would doubt the first question out of the mouth. Hey, are you for real? And as soon as I think somebody talks to me, I think they know that I try to be for real.
Okay. A few questions about the endgame then, just to close out this little segment. When it was confirmed that JT and Steven were going to be in the final two, what was the attitude that you had and that your fellow jurors had towards them individually and as a pair?
It was interesting because, you know, sitting there from a jury's point of view, JT really played a great game because he really was acting at all times. And he knew the game of Survivor. He was pandering those jury votes and we had no clue what he was doing. So, you know, when I got voted off, he hung his head and, you know, the vote was 3-2, so I knew that he and I had voted the same way, so he was, you know, off the hook, really. I figured, you know, Aaron and I knew Aaron and Todd were going to vote for me. And I thought Steven, you know, at that point was a little weasel, and it really pissed me off, knowing that Aaron was quote unquote not worthy. But as I get farther into my life, farther into the game of Survivor, playing, you know, almost 100 days, I realize that everybody's worthy to sit up there. They just come at it at a different angle. But at the time, I felt that Aaron wasn't worthy. And that it was a great travesty that the quote unquote Warrior Alliance, which was only in my mind an alliance, was falling apart. I just thought it was so close to changing the game. At least that's what I thought at that time. So close to changing the game. Mm-hmm. That I was so disappointed that it followed through with what we started.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Now, at Ponderosa, with all of the other jurors, we saw ultimately the end result was JT wins 7-0. Was it just like a slam dunk the whole time? Everyone knew JT was going to win once it was clear that they were the final two?
I think so. You know, it would have been interesting to see if I had been in that final, if I had been in the finals against JT, because everybody would have figured JT would have won a landslide, but I would have gotten Debbie's vote, I would have gotten Tyson's vote. I probably would have gotten Brendan's vote. And then depending on who else wasn't there, you know. JT still would have won, but I just know that I would have gotten more votes than Steven. But yeah, it was pretty much a slam dunk. Everybody was just, you know, so bought into his MO and his shtick. You know, at that last tribal council, if Steven would have said, hold on a second, JT, we made every decision together. You knew Coach was going to get voted off. But you voted with him to get his vote and hung your head when you came back and said, hey, I'm glad we voted him off. You voted off this person. If you would have said that, it wouldn't have been, you know. People's minds are usually made up going to the final tribal council. And I think, I shouldn't say this, that, you know, Bruce will kill me, but I feel that the outcome is pretty close. Not everybody's vote and mind is made up, and people still be swayed in that final jury.
Okay. That's interesting because, I mean, this is definitely a theme that we want to return to later, but a criticism that we often hear of Ponderosa as an institution is that it encourages people to just think a certain way and not make their own opinions heard there. But you're saying that there is actually an opportunity for people's views to be changed at Final Tribal.
And it could be. I just only know, you know, with my own mind. Although the heroes and villains, you know, I mean, things can always change. You never say never. I mean, the heroes and villains finale, you know, if Russell would have just said, yeah, you know what, I'm an a-hole. I was out here for, you know, 4 months back-to-back. My mind's crazy. I'm sorry what I did. You know, I just tried to play the game really hard. I've taken off, you know, 6 months from my family. And I was a total jerk. I'm really sorry. Kind of, you know, if he would have taken that approach, then he would have gotten votes. So I do think that it could change. I guess I'll kind of change the answer.
So, Coach, I heard that you said a few years ago in an interview, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, that had Steven won the final immunity and betrayed JT by taking Aaron, that the jury would have voted for Aaron. Is that true, or is that false reporting?
Everybody loathes Erin. You know, she is famous for calling me a jackass, and that's about it. You know, she was a coattail rider. You're never going to see her again. And so people loathed her. So, you know, actually, if JT would have taken Erin to the end, we would have loathed JT. So, but no, if they would have voted out JT, I think Steven would have won.
Okay, cool. Dom, do you have anything more about Token Cheese, actually, before we move on?
No, I'm happy to move on to Heroes vs. Villains, if both of you guys are.
Yeah, now, Coach, of course, I remember seeing, it might have been actually at the reunion or somewhere, that you mentioned you basically knew you were going to get a chance to come back and play again. And when the phone rang for Heroes vs. Villains, was there any doubt in your mind that you were going to take it and go?
No, I mean, you know, at that point, I'd lost my job. I was free and clear. So for me, I was just, I was ready to go. And the lag time, you know, the finale was in May and they made those calls in June, and we were back out there in July. So there was, like, no time to even adjust, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing that we talked briefly about earlier that I'm very curious about is you mentioned the idea that they put you on the villains team as opposed to the heroes now. What did you make of that?
I mean, I kind of knew it was coming just because of the public reaction to me, not based on my actions in the game, but just public reaction of dislike. I was disappointed, but it was like, all right, I'm going to roll with this. I think if I'd been on the heroes tribe in the very beginning, I think things would have played out a lot differently just because, as I mentioned earlier, Steven, Colby, Tom, Rupert, they all wanted to play with me. And so I think it would have been a different story had that happened. I'm really surprised because I got it. I got what they had done with my character. I got the public perception. So, it was what it was.
How do you think this labeling of people as heroes or villains affected the way the game played out? Because it seemed like being shoehorned into that role was going to have some kind of effect on people, no matter, like, what it was.
I mean, there were three villains in the end, right? I mean, there were three villains standing on that final podium. I don't know. I mean, I heard some of the villains say, well, since we're villains, we might as well just be villains. So it might have affected them. I think that the heroes thought that they were holy rollers. I don't think it affected the outcome of the game. I know that early on when the heroes were showing themselves to kind of be jackasses, I said to one of the producers, man, it'd be great if at the end of this, the villains were the heroes and the heroes became the villains. And they probably had already thought about that, but it didn't kind of become a theme for a good part of that series, that season.
Okay, so what were your goals going into the season? Because you said that coming out of Talking Scenes, you felt like you'd accomplished what you wanted to accomplish. And so did what you had in mind change for this season, or was it just more of the same?
No, for me, I wanted to find redemption in that asshole that everybody thought that I was. I wanted to go out there and be, and show a softer side of myself. And so I definitely accomplished that, unknowingly at the time when I was sitting there weeping on national television. It really did show a softer side, maybe too soft a side. But that was my goal, I wanted to win.
Okay,
I felt like I had enough alliances among everybody that I could go far into the game, if not into the end. And I was going to use the fact that, hey, I'm not going to betray anybody. The fact that Russell, Santa threw me under the bus at the last second. The fact that Tyson voted himself out by not getting rid of Russell when we wanted to. I mean, there were so many variables in that. It was a pretty disappointing season for me just because I had a lot more to do. You play such a short time when you make it fairly to the jury. You think about Jeff Kent this year. He had a great season. I laughed at so many things that he had to say, but you don't truly get developed until after the merge. So I would say that my main thing was to show the audience that I had a softer side, that I didn't always have to be right. And obviously I succeeded.
Okay. Now, when you were first on that beach with the rest of your tribe, what was the general feeling you got about how your other tribe mates perceived you, at both like as a player and as a person in general? Because I think there was a lot of your own personality incorporated into you as a player, wanting to go with the strong people and being honorable. Like, did they give off any kind of vibes about how did you feel like they perceived you to be a legitimate person to be working with, or kind of that asshole that had no self-awareness or whatever?
No, because when you go back on Survivor, people look at how you play the game more than who you are. So when you looked at that first game, I stayed true to that inner alliance. I didn't really lie. So people knew that going in. That's why all the heroes wanted to play with me. That's why all the heroes were scratching their heads, wanted to be fired long. And, you know, with Russell there, that really changed the complexity of things because he was running all over everybody trying to get alliances in the very beginning. And I actually felt at the very beginning kind of like the odd man out. I mean, Randy and I had a good alliance. Tyson and I had a good alliance. But, you know, in Survivor, you don't ever want to be that tag-along. You don't ever want to be that Klingon that's like, knows somebody that knows somebody. And so, in Heroes and Villains, I think that was my problem, that Tyson would always say, listen, I got Boston Rob in check. I got Sandra and Courtney. Don't worry, Brandy saw it, or is Jerry saw it. You know, me going out there and meeting Jerry, that was a great surprise. That just having a good rapport with her was really awesome. So that was cool, but there wasn't a lot of those relationships that developed. So I go to Tyson and he'd say, I got Courtney and Sandra, so I never developed a relationship with Courtney or Sandra. I started developing a relationship with Boz and Rob, but I was kind of that guy in the middle. Same way when Jerry Nancy jumped over to Russell's camp, she was talking to Russell and Parvati and Danielle, but not me. I wasn't in the middle of things, so I think that kind of hurt me. But it was just hardcore game playing. I think it's always like that. I don't know, it's because people are thinking about camera time, people are thinking about longevity in the game, and they're just playing from the very beginning. It doesn't matter about the people that you meet. It matters more about, you know, the alliances that you make.
Mm-hmm. Now, something that I know I've always been very, very curious about, and I'm sure many people out there listening have, and I don't know what you can or can't tell us about this, we know based just on the scheduling that Russell played, it had like 2 weeks between playing Samoa and Heroes versus Villains, and thus obviously his season hadn't aired by the time that you guys started filming. What, if anything, did you know about him entering the game, and what did he tell you about himself?
I didn't know squat. None of us knew squat. We asked him why he was cast as a villain. And he said, you know, that he was true to his alliance and that at a tribal council with the final five, somebody betrayed him. And he went over and tackled that guy. And so, I mean, that's what he told me. At least, you know, I don't know what he told everybody else. That's what he told me. And, you know, he was smart. He just said, you know, hey, honor and integrity, coach. I know that's how you play. I want to take that. So let's do that. So, you know, he knew what strength to pull on everybody. But we didn't know anything about him at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've always been very curious about that. So, like you mentioned, this relationship with Jerry really starts to form, and that looks like a very, you know, strong connection for you both, as I'm sure is a good friend of yours and within the game. And as you know, you're good with Tyson. You've played with him before. He's got Courtney and Sandra in this big alliance with Boston Rob. Randy goes out first, and Parvati and Russell and Danielle seem to be really on the outs here. How did all this end up actually flipping around now? Because I think you were really the big key role player in how that all transpired.
No, not really. It's a lot. You know, it kind of goes deeper than what most people think because the producers just wanted to say, okay, you know, coach flip, et cetera, et cetera. We were good. We were really good. You know, me, Tyson, and Rob were very tight. And then, you know, Courtney and Sandra were, you know, in the alliance, but kind of like after that. And then after that, it was Jerry Manthe. You know, I mean, it was like all of us kind of rolled into one, so we had this huge 6-on-3 alliance. I said at the very beginning, when Randy got voted out, I was not for that vote. I said, you know, what do you want in an All-Stars? You want somebody that you can trust. It doesn't matter about winning challenges. We're going to merge. We're going to win challenges, lose challenges. But in an All-Stars, it matters less about getting to the merge with numbers because you know people on the other side, so you know that the loyalties aren't necessarily going to stay. But you definitely need to have somebody you can trust. And I can trust Randy. He wasn't going to go anywhere. He wasn't threatening, but Boss Rob hated him. And just said, we need to get rid of this guy. I said it should be Carvey first, and it would have been a much different game if it had been that. So after that happened, and we had 6-3, Russell, you know, we thought that he had found the idol. And so we just assumed that he had the idol. And so we got together, and it was like, okay, we're going to flush out the idol. It's going to be 3-3-3. They can vote for whoever they want to. We're going to split our votes 3-3. We're going to vote for Russell, and we're going to vote for Carvey. So we all had it going into tribal. We all had that plan going into tribal. But right before tribal, Tyson goes to Russell, says, you know, hey, man, Russell goes to Tyson and says, hey, you know, I you guys are far against the votes. I don't think that's wise. I'm not playing the idol. I want Carvey gone as well, or something like that. I can't stand it. Tyson says, yeah, we are going to split the votes. And Russell says, you don't need to do that, man. You don't need to do that. I'm with you, man. If you don't do that, I'll be with you this whole game. So we go into tribal, and Tyson does not vote for whoever he voted. I forgot exactly what happened. Russell gave the idol to Carvey. I totally forget it. But basically, Tyson voted himself out. And so that then put us down to 5-3. And so Jerry and I were, you know, in the middle. I didn't really get a vibe. I didn't get a good vibe from Sandra. I don't really like her. I didn't really get a good vibe from Courtney. Didn't like her in the game process. And Boss Rob and I was trying to be soldiers with him in his terminology, but I just knew that Boss Rob did not care about you unless you could do something for him. So Jerry and I were in the middle. Russell's running around like crazy. And, he, you know, him and Parvati and Danielle. One day, Jerry and I just basically pulled court while both groups came to us and said, this is why you need to vote for us. So Jerry and I, we were doing everything together and making sure that we discussed things. And Jerry did something that you never want to do in Survivor, and that is, if you're in a tight alliance with somebody, don't go to them and say, hey, this is what I'm going to do, and I hope you follow me, because that betrays the trust. And so Jerry came up to me and said, I talked to Russell. He promised me on his word that he was blah, blah, blah. And I know it's crazy, but I'm going with Russell. And I hope you join me. So when she did that, it went from 5-3 to 4-4. And it really wrecked our plans. And I begged her. I said, first of all, I got mad. I said, you can't do this, you know. And then I said, look, you know, you can't do this because you need to go with this side. And I don't like Russell. And I had a really good feeling. And, you know, when you go on a second time, you get to know what questions not to ask, but you know, kind of to start reading other people, not only the people that you're playing with, but the producers. And one day I said something. And watch the reaction of somebody that was behind camera. And it confirmed that Russell was pure evil. Didn't say anything, but I confirmed that in my mind. And I went to Jerry, and it actually made her even more dead set on voting off Boston Rob, because she says, I don't want anybody to play us like we're a bunch of puppets. And so I begged Jerry to reconsider. She didn't. And then I was faced with the situation of, do I stick with my guns and cause us to draw rocks? Or do I just float in the wind and go with Jerry? So it was my decision. Do I draw rocks? Or do I survive another 3 days? I mean, at that point in the game, when Tyson got voted off, I didn't really, you know, everything's kind of like, now what do you do? You're kind of screwed, because that was my ally. Randy was my ally. Jerry's my ally, but now she's saying that she's gonna, no matter what, she's going to go with Russell. So I really had no choice but to go with them unless I wanted to draw rocks. I asked if it was going to be fire or if it was going to be drawing rocks, and they said it was going to be drawing rocks. In hindsight, what I should have done is I should have told Jerry, if you want to draw rocks, that's fine with me. And I should have forced the tie and then hope that she reconsider her vote, you know. So if that was how it went down and it's still thinking about it, pisses me off. The chances of me getting voted off pre-merge, chances of getting to the merge and not going far were pretty few and far between, but the cards were definitely against me.
Yeah, I was going to ask, because it seemed with that vote you had a choice between being idealistic and sticking to the people that you were loyal to from the beginning, or being more pragmatic and thinking, well, if I do force rocks, I could be going home here and looking out for your own self-interest, if you like. And yeah, maybe that's the wrong way to phrase it, but how did you end up making that decision? Because it seems like, you know, that might not have been the course that you were taking, say, when you played for the first time in talking teams.
I made that decision at tribal council, actually. You know, I just kept thinking to myself, what should I do? I don't want to go home tonight. I mean, that's the main thing. You know, when you're there, you still have a chance. You know, we saw that with Abby this last season. She's there. She's got a chance. When you get your torch knocked out, that's when you don't have a chance. And so, you know, I was sitting there thinking, what do I want to do? I really wanted to play with Boston Rob. And, you know, I told him when it's a tribal that I wanted to go with him. I was sitting at tribal. I just was faced with that, you know, should I go home? That slight chance of going home or picking the wrong side. It wasn't just me drawing a rock, but a chance that Boston Rob and Russell were tied. You know, it's a one in three shot if one of your other alliance gets voted out. And they will help. So I think what I thought was a sure thing to wait to be in the game on the day. You know, it's the right and wrong decision.
Sure. Now, when Boston Rob got up to leave to get his torch snuffed, he made a comment to you and said, you're a little man, you know, after you've deflected your votes. What were your thoughts about that reaction from him?
Well, you know, there's a sucker born every day, and I guess I'm the biggest sucker out there because I keep trying to give out people that are leaving, and they keep crashing. So it's like, I just sit there like everybody else and be like all hung dog and just look at the floor because, damn it, I did it to Ross and Rob. I did it to Rick. I did it to Stacy. You know, I'm the one that looks like a fool. But, you know, it hurt me, obviously. I thought at first, actually, that he was saying it to Russell, because Russell was physically small.
Yeah.
But in actuality, it was to me, and it hurt, and, you know, I watched it, got red in the face, and felt embarrassed, but, you know, what can you do? If he were in that same situation, I seriously doubt that he would tie up a boat of rocks, knowing that he had a one in three shot of getting on the wrong side of an alliance. And,
yeah.
I took my chances and did what I thought was best for me then. If I were to do it differently again, I would have forced the tie and then forced Jerry to vote my way. But she was just made up in her mind and did not change her mind at all.
Yeah, if I can add, I think Rick snubbing you on a hug might have been actually his highlight of his entire season playing. Yeah.
Oh, well.
So, not long after this, you end up actually getting voted out yourself. How did this all go down from your perspective? Like, do you feel like you could have done anything to prevent it?
No, because, you know, Sandra at the last minute told Russell, hey, he's gunning for you. There's nothing you can do about something like that. I mean, at that point, the die was cast. My golden season was turning into mud. And there really was nothing I could have done. It was the blind side. Russell didn't tell Jerry. You know, it's, there was nothing I could have done. It was unfortunate that it happened, but, you know, Jerry and I were oblivious. Russell talked to Sandra at the last minute. Sandra, you know, it's either her or Courtney. And, you know, it was pretty clear that Russell just totally blindsided me. And he didn't know about my intentions. So nothing I could have done about this. Well, one thing I want to say about, you know, wrapping up heroes and villains, I will say this. You know, another one of my goals going in was to go out there and be a really good competitor. And that's one thing we haven't talked about because, you know, when I went out there the first time, I was really disappointed in myself that I wasn't stronger in challenges. And so the second time I went out there, I went down to L.A. and I spent about a month down there before Heroes and Villains aired. Knew I was going out. And every day, I ran on the beach. I'd sprint. I'd go out into the water. I'd swim. I'd come back. and I'd sit on the beach and do a crossword puzzle or something like that for a mental game. Then I'd get up, sprint, swim, come back, do a mental puzzle. And I did that for that whole month. So when I went down there, I was like, man, I am in fighting shape. And the first day that, you know, I had that new tattoo of, on my chest, you know, the producer said, take off your shirt. We want to see the new ink. And I took off my shirt and they were like, man, you're lean. You know, I said, yeah, I'm lean and mean this time. And I told them, I said, I will be an animal in the challenges. And, you know, you see the very first challenge where I frog marched Colby.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you see that. I mean, just from the very first day, I really kind of set the tone that, you know what, this is what I'm going to do. And this is how I'm going to do it. And I feel like I went out there and did it. And so that was very satisfying to do that. And so I felt like I accomplished that. You know, when we were scoring points on our team, I was the one scoring the points. When we went up and over, I was the one that scored the point when I beat Rupa. When we were, you know, I mean, I felt like I was Boston Rob, obviously, he was the man. But aside from Boston Rob, I was out there winning challenges. So that was really gratifying to me to go out there and do that.
Okay. Now, after you get voted out, you move to the jury, and so you're looking at things from a different angle now. And you get to see JT's downfall firsthand. What did you make of that, given that, you know, you played with him, you've gone through a whole season with him, and now he's making what I imagine must have seemed at the time to be some horrendous blunder. What was your immediate reaction?
Well, you know, when you get to the jury and you watch that second half of the season from the jury standpoint, it's bittersweet. You're still in the game, but you're so far removed, you don't really have any control till that final vote. It's like jurors get so bitter. But, you know, I JT actually, you know, he kept saying, hold on, hold on, hold on to me. He didn't have any affinity for Russell, but then he was like, holy cow, you know, the women are, they've got a women's alliance. And of course he would think that because Poverty, you know, she's notorious for having that girl power. And so, you know, when I watched all that unfold, I just thought, you know, it was good gamesmanship that he tried to do something, but he really didn't need to do that just because, you know, they could have easily stuck together over on the Heroes side. They weren't down numbers, so they should have just tried to stick together. I thought it was unfortunate watching it as it played out on film and seeing that they were going to make him a coach. You know, that was kind of unfortunate. Because I think he's a good guy, and, you know, when you win, you come back that quick. You know, what else are you going to improve on? What are you going to do for an encore kind of thing? You know, it was kind of a difficult position for him and come back and play after you just won because you have nowhere to go now.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that all the people from your season, like you said, Tyson voted himself out, you were gone earlier than you expected, and now obviously the situation with JT. Erin actually had what I thought was a pretty good point in one of her interviews where she said that maybe it was that for you coming out of talking scenes, it was just the wrong time to come back because you'd been out of the game just long enough to get your mind out of the game, but not long enough so that you could kind of grow from that experience and change as people in the way that you needed to do better.
Exactly. So the question is?
Oh, well, I guess, do you agree with that, or is there anything you want to add to that?
No, I agree with that. I think, I agree, and I think that, you know, you always want to do better, and you always want to be better, but it doesn't always work out that way. For me, I feel like I did better every time because what I could control coming in were things that were triple.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And look at this. Coach agreeing wholeheartedly with Erin. Maybe we all can just get along. I want to ask a little bit more about Ponderosa for Heroes versus Villains because this is historically one of the more talked about ones and we've never had this opportunity before. And now you ended up voting for Parvati, and I'm curious as to why that was, and more, I'm curious to why more people didn't vote for Parvati.
Well, you know, I think that it would be great if they could sequester the jury, because we're not supposed to talk about the individuals, but we do anyway. Ponderosa was a really safe environment, first of all, let me say that. I got voted off first, and I, you know, most times when you get voted off first, they they kind of freeze you out, and I really tried to say this was going to be a really good, friendly Ponderosa, and it was a good, you know, it really was. You know, we did the band, did the music video. It was a really productive Ponderosa. It wasn't the regular sit around, get drunk, and then, you know, go out and be really mean at the final jury and get really bitter. Yeah, for me, the final vote was, it was a lemming vote, I'm going to call it. It's funny, at Ponderosa, you know, there's this subtle shift that happens. And if you watch season 23 Ponderosa, where I feel, humbly speaking, that I should have won, you'll watch, you know, a week before the final tribal council, Don and Whitney and Keith are sitting there saying, yeah, I'm going to vote the coach. But those last people that get voted off are sometimes the most critical of those people. And so, you know, people were just, they just got on the bandwagon. I remember Courtney saying one day, I'm voting for my girl, Sandra. And I looked at her and I'm like, why? She's like, she's my girl. I'm voting for her. And she, it was the first time that anybody had really said out loud, I'm voting for this person, because you've got Parvati, Russell, and Sandra. I mean, what's the lesser of three evils? And it really was a vote that nobody wanted to vote for. You know, if Jerry would have made it to the end, she would have won. You know, if Rupert would have made it to the end, he would have won against those guys. So, you know, it was just a lemming vote. And Courtney kind of voiced it. Other people jumped on the bandwagon. I think Barbie should have won that season, but she's, I think she was too cute, too pretty, had too much going for her, and they just kind of threw their votes in this way.
Yeah, I think it was an interesting situation because they were either going to have to award either Parvati or Sandra their second $1 million or vote for Russell, which was never going to happen. And I think Coach actually may make kind of a good point, which is they both already won the game, so you can't really use that argument against either. Parvati does seem like she has kind of more just ostensibly going for her and is so charming and whatever in real life. And it comes across, I think, more as like comes across more manipulative than Sandra, who comes across just far more genuine, I think, typically.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that, I mean, Russell could have had a chance if he would have just owned up, you know, and just said, look, I'm really sorry. You know, and unfortunately, that was kind of the attitude that I took going into that final tribal. You know, JT, he wanted a landslide, so that's like a no-brainer. But with that vote, that was really on my mind when I went into the final tribal on 23, is that I kept thinking, you know, if Russell would have just said, yeah, I'm sorry, if they're penitent, that there would, he would have gotten more votes. So I came across in that last one just, I think, more penitent than I should have. I should have told everybody I outwitted, outlasted, and outplayed all of you guys. I had a target on my back for the first time. Ozzy, you're better because you're not here. You guys know I played a better game than anybody. Yeah, I had to break my word a couple of times, but who hasn't out here? You guys should vote for me because these two guys beside me, Sophie's the worst social player to ever play the game. You guys hated her up to 10 minutes ago. And Albert's been an on-factor the whole time. That's what I should have said, but I was thinking about Russell and how he took that approach, and he should have been a lot more contrite.
Yeah, I'm curious how that whole hatred towards Russell grew, because obviously a lot of people left the game disliking him, but I was wondering if this is like the impact of Ponderosa, as you were stressing earlier, where everyone comes out disliking him, but when everyone is in the room together and they're all talking about how much I hate Russell, then it creates this kind of groupthink mentality where now everyone hates him even more than they did before, and he just has no chance to win anymore.
No, it was, there's something wrong with Russell. You know,
he's not denying that at all, but I'm saying maybe Ponderosa augmented it to an extent.
No. I mean, I there's something wrong with him. And, you know, I mean, like, I remember when Jerry Nancy got voted off and she said, if Russell goes next, I'm afraid he's going to come to Ponderosa and physically beat me up. And so the women were scared of him. The guys didn't like him. And so it really, Ponderosa didn't create some false sense of hatred towards Russell. People literally hated his guts. And when he got, when everything was done, nobody talked to him. Nobody talked to him. And that's usually typical for a day or two. Nobody talked to him. He actually, the psychologist had to go with him and talk to him because nobody would talk to him. And when we flew back, nobody would sit next to him. So it was pretty ferocious for him. And he still doesn't have really that many friends within the game of Survivor. Certainly not any of the seasons that he's played.
Yeah, so we very much have been interested in Heroes versus Villains and the Ponderosa and everything about it for a very long time. So thank you very much for all that. And I think now is, of course, the time to move on to your third game now, South Pacific. And at this point, prior to playing, you've played twice. And when you get this call to go play for the third time, to go play on season 23, apparently, a week and a half or whatever before actually having to leave, was the idea of playing for a third time something that you'd been like dying to have happen, or something you were reluctant about, or somewhere in between?
I was not reluctant at all. You know, when I got the phone call, I was just like to the moon excited. You know, it was out of the blue. I thought after I had just bounced up into Heroes and Villains and got voted out and just seemed too soft, not been the character that I was the first time, I figured they'd never call me back. So when they called me back, I was pretty excited about it. I did not hesitate at all. And I just thought, this is it. Let's do it. Let's do this. So I was really excited about it.
So entering this season, compared to entering the previous two seasons, did your goals change? Were you more probably focused on, like, we see as people come back, they get more and more focused on actually winning the game? Or, we saw a lot of the more, like, religious overtones out of this season, of course, which is something we'll be getting to. Was that something that was pre-planned, or did you enter with the same mentality as the first two times?
For me, it was a really different attitude for me going into that last time. I was much more humbler. I wanted to meet people where they were at. I wanted to, just go out there and just have just a really genuine time. One of the things that happened in Ponderosa with Heroes and Villains is that I was very chivalrous to the ladies and, just tried to just be myself. And Courtney and Danielle both said to me, "Coach, why weren't you like this in the game? If you were like this in the game, we would have never voted you off." And it was, it was a good eye-opener. I said to myself, if I go back again, I'll drop the Dragon Slayer stick and just be a regular guy. And I tried to do that this last time. The Dragon Slayer didn't creep up until way later. And, by that time, I kind of had the game not totally locked in, but I felt like I had a, really good run going.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Now, when did you find out that it was going to be you and Ozzy in the, each of you going to be, as it were, kind of like leading a separate tribe? And what were your thoughts about finding out that that was going to be the case for you?
Oh, yeah. So, they called a week and a half before I left, and they basically said, hey, you're going to come out. It's not an all-star. It's a more individual thing, so you need to do this. And I kind of knew that it was going to be two people. I thought it was going to be me and Philip, and I'm pretty sure that it was supposed to be Philip and I. But Philip didn't want to do back-to-back seasons, and so that's kind of how that happened. And the rest is history. I knew it was going to be Ozzy when I saw him in the airport when we were catching a flight to Samoa. And, it didn't really compute. I was actually scared to death the last time because I was thinking, okay, I don't want to go home first. I thought I might go home first. And I thought if I was playing against Philip, who would you want on your team? Coach or Philip? Two crazy guys in the public's eye, but I'd rather have me than Philip. So I thought I had a good advantage over Philip. When I saw it was Ozzy, I was just like, crap, good looking, younger male, great in challenges, I'm screwed. And I thought for sure that when I blew that first challenge, that it was, the final days of Coach on Survivor.
Yeah, actually, one thing I wanted to ask you about is right after that first challenge, when your tribe was all gathering to go up to camp, none of them but Edna stood back to, like, help you, gather your belongings and stuff. They all just kind of trotted off. Were you concerned? I imagine so. And what were you kind of thinking about in terms of turning that around?
I thought I was screwed, and I just was like, man, what can I do? What can I do to help myself? And I thought, I'm on the outs. I lost the challenge. Nobody wants to play with me. I have got to show them that I have value, and I've got to relate to every single person here. So when we got around in a circle, when we got back to camp, you know, I just tried to relate to everybody. So I spoke Russian to Sophie because she said she was a Russian major, and I lived in Russia for a year growing up, so I knew of that. And then I went to, you know, Albert, baseball coach. Hey, we're both coaches. You know, Rick, Utah, good friend of mine at Tyson's, et cetera, et cetera. I just tried to go and relate to everyone. And, you know, I guess it worked. And, you know, I think another thing that really helped is I just tried to parcel out enough information every few days for them to keep me around. And of course, the first thing I said when we got to that circle is, hey, I've been here before. I know you guys don't want me here. Just keep me around for, you know, a little while because I know the island. I've been here. I've been to the beach, and I'll be valued. When we went to the first challenge, you know, I took charge. They wanted me to take charge. I said, you're doing this, you're doing this, I'm doing this, and here's how we're going to win. And, you know, it was really good because I think that when you see the two tribes together, you say to yourself, coach's tribe is going to get annihilated. And I thought that they were probably the better athletic team, but we really were good at coming into the challenge from a game plan and them allowing me, since I'd done it before, to put the right people in the right place. When you look at Ozzy's team, it was just all about Ozzy. Every challenge, Ozzy just wanted to put himself at the focal point of the challenges. And several times that backfired on me. But yeah, I was scared going in to camp because my mind was scrambling. How can I get an advantage in this game when I'm already on the outs?
Right, yeah. And so what we end up see happening here is the formation of a very powerful alliance with yourself, Albert and Sophie, Brandon and Rick. Now, and this was night one, you know, now famously that night out on the beach with this discussion, and you guys ended up forming the final five. How did this, as far as like a lifeline for you, were you set now that this was going to be like your plan for the long run?
Yeah, I felt like sitting there on the beach, it just kind of clicked. It was really cool. You know, Edna, Stacy, and Christine were all in the makeshift shelter. And it was just a great, organic moment that happened on the beach. We were all sitting there. We weren't talking strategy. We were just getting to know each other. And all of a sudden, you know, it just kind of hit me. I was like, hey, you know what, guys? This, I think I said something like, I really, man, this is no joke, you know, no BS. I really like these people. This is like a really good group of people. And Rick said, yeah, I know it is. And Sophie was like, yeah. And I said, listen. I said, we should make an alliance and stick to that alliance. And time and time again, you'll see. If you have an alliance, day one alliances always stay on the test of time if you make it and stick by it. So I preach that every day. And as I said earlier, people wanted to get out of it. People wanted to get squirrely. And I was continually reassuring, complimenting, making people feel loved and valued every day that I was out there. And it was hard work because they wanted to get squirrely, and the game gets you paranoid when you see this person talking to that person and these people are scrambling. But, you know, it was an alliance that I pounded it into them that it was going to work, and it did work. And it got us all the way down to five. And, you know, I put myself smack dab in the middle of it so I could get all the way to the end. That's what happened.
So yeah, certainly this alliance staying strong was something that we saw happen. As mentioned, that you guys comprised the final five, and I think a major, as it was shown to us on TV, role in that, perhaps the driving force behind that, was the idea of religion and this shared bond between you guys. And it seems like you were really the driving force behind instituting it in everyone within that group. Now, was this more something you'd planned on entering the game, like channeling your faith more prominently? Or was this, you know, Brandon was out there and he's himself a very devout guy, and this was kind of response to that? And or was this, hey, this is a great way to keep these people loyal?
You know, it really wasn't that big of a part of it. It's shown that religion was a big part of our alliance, but it really wasn't. It was part of it, but it was the main factor was, hey, guys, we're by ourselves. It's the first day. The five of us go to the final five. That's what needs to happen because we're out here doing it. So, you know, I knew that Edna really wasn't into Christianity. I knew Sophie was, you know, a little bit agnostic. Albert was a Christian. Brandon was a Christian. I was a Christian. Rick was, you know, I don't really know, Mormon. But it was something that when you're out there in such desperate times, you want to cling to something constant. The creator of the universe is always constant. So it became something that we did, and it became something of a ritual. It's just like wearing dirty socks for a soccer game that you did it before, or having, you know, eating at this restaurant and ordering this meal because you did it before you won. It became something like that, not to minimize it. I've always been strong in my faith, but it was just something that kind of manifested itself more because of the players that you were playing.
Okay, because I imagine that religion was still a large part of your life back when you were on Talking Teens and Heroes Little Villains, but we never really saw it come into play there. So was it just editing that made it seem like it played a bigger role in South Pacific?
It had a bigger role because other people wanted to do it. As a coach, Albert, I'm sure, is used to praying before games because that's what we do is that. And, you know, it has become a little bit taboo to do that, but I knew Albert being in the South, he was always used to doing that. So it was more just that, you know, it became a more prominent role, partially because that, you know, when you look at it, when we got to the merch, it's kind of a boring story. You know, the producers are always looking for that angle. And if you think about it, you put Survivor 23 in a nutshell. The first episode was interesting because Coach is on the outs. But within the first 6 days, he ingrains himself in a pretty rock solid alliance. After that, it's back and forth between Upolu and Tabaiti. So that's interesting. But when it comes down to it in a nutshell, after the first 6 days, Coach puts himself in the driver's seat, determines every single vote, every time he goes to tribal council. It never went against how I wanted. I was always in the driver's seat. Because a pagong, once the merge happens, that's pretty boring television. So what is that story that they're going to weave besides the red herring of, oh, this person might go home, but they don't. So, I mean, they had to weave in there the religious aspect. And, of course, they knew that there was going to be a big part of me going to Ozzy and saying, Christian, man, I want to play this game with you, not knowing he was going to go and turn around and betray me and share everything that I had shared with everybody else with him. So, you know, he had burned his own bridge, and that way nobody really takes that into account. But, you know, I think that they knew that was coming, so they kind of wanted to set it up for a while. I felt like this last time I got a really good edit, and they can't just have you be on top all the time. They got to be able to touch you down the sides. And you also have to realize that if they think Sophie's going to win, she's going to kind of get a little bit. There's got to be some justification of that. So my downfall here at the end, preaching too much about honor and integrity, and the religion card was being played too much. They had to play that up to give a reason for the jury being bitter and not awarding the million dollars.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And I think that's something I will certainly be talking about, the jury decision towards the end of this. But now, when let's talk about Sophie, I think, and Albert in particular, because it seems like with Brandon and Rick and Edna, at least the way it was portrayed to us, they seem to be more kind of blindly in your back pocket, not to give them too grossly little credit, but it seems like Sophie and Albert, at least, one would be able to recognize as more thinking players that might be more willing to turn the tables if they thought something was ever going to go up. Were there times when you were super concerned about this?
After the first 6 days, I was never concerned except for when we went to tribal council and Cochran flipped, and I was pretty sure that he was going to flip. So I really was not concerned because I just, you know, instead of going off on an adventure and going to do a Tai Chi and going and hiking for an hour trying to find steaks and all that other kind of stuff that I did on the first couple of seasons, you know, this season I was there to play the game. I said that at the very beginning. I was going to come to play the game, and I did. And it's probably the most rewarding theme that I can say about myself on Survivor, that every time I went out to accomplish something, be one of the biggest characters and try to change the game and put my stamp on it. I did it. Go out and try to find redemption. Show a softer side of myself. Come out and do better the challenges. Did it. Go out last time. Play the game. In 23. And I did that each time. So it's very fulfilling for me to step back and say with all these uncontrollable things, I was able to consistently control what I wanted to do going into the game. So I wasn't really concerned. But I did a lot of work. I did a lot of work making sure that that alliance stuck together. And you don't see that in the edit, as I've said many times. You didn't see me going and saying to Albert, okay, you know what, Albert? you're pandering for jury votes. We agreed not to do that. So do I need to get you off or are you going to stay in line? Stay in line. And, you know, so, I mean, it was kind of a lot of that the whole time that I had to do where I really wasn't concerned. I don't know if I brought my stuff to tribal. I don't think I brought my stuff to tribal besides the first time and maybe at the merge. Other than that, I just brought my stuff to camp.
Okay. I think one question that people had coming into the season was, you have coach who's been given this opportunity to play the game for third and probably the final time. Is he going to, like, have new tricks in his bag? Like, is he going to still want to play with honesty and integrity and all of this stuff? Or is he going to take maybe a more kind of cold, realistic approach to the game? I think one decision which kind of exemplifies this question is the decision to hide the information about the hidden music idol from Brandon. Because that might be an example of where, like, the more boundaries you operated under in previous seasons were blurred a little bit.
I think the thing is that people that know me and people that are around me, they know that I'm really genuine. Even if I'm an asshole like I was on Token Sheen, I was genuine. You know, the first vote, I wanted Candace to go. She went. You know, second vote, Jared got sick, so that was out of my control. You know, but I still controlled the vote up to a certain point in that game. So I feel like, you know, people that are around me, they know that I'm genuine. And that comes off. And so I know that maybe people thought that, or maybe people thought, well, I wonder what he's going to play like. But I mean, you know, Russell told Brandon before the game, because Russell found out somehow that I was going to be on it. He told Brandon, you grab a hold of coach's coattail, that you ride that all the way to the end, because he's not going to lie to you. So, you know, that's kind of that.
Yeah. Now, I think one very big point of interest that we want to hit on is, of course, after having gone through your merge in Token Sheens with the kind of disheveled Timbira tribe where none of you are really cohesive, completely on the opposite end of the spectrum here, we have the Supolu tribe coming in six strong, perhaps, you know, up there historically with the strongest tribes entering a merge in terms of loyalty that we've ever seen. And now, unfortunately, there are six other people on the other tribe, and you've got to get one of them to flip. And so how did you arrive on Cochran? And then, of course, we saw that phenomenal scene of you drawing the line in the sand on the beach. How did you know all of that so quickly?
So a couple of things. It was a great moment. And I got to tell you, you know, I don't care what people think. I don't care what people say about 23. I proved in 23 that I could be one of the best players in the game because I had a target on my back the whole way. Austin Robb had just won his season. We had all seen him win his season. It wasn't like that hadn't been aired. Nobody wanted a returning player to get far. They said in the first day they wanted Coach Dawn, and I was able to change it. I never had my name written down, and so I proved that I was one of the best players that can play this game, because I'll tell you what, if I had won season 22, if Austin Robb had come out there in season 23, I don't think he would have done what I did. I don't think very many people could have gone in my shoes and done what I did. Remember, Ozzy got voted out three times. Okay, Ozzy got voted out three times in this game, and I really felt like I stepped it up and played my A game. So, back to the question, you know, we get to the merge, Ozzy does this thing, I believe him. When it happened, Albert and Sophie were like, I don't know, it doesn't ring true. So I started to ask myself, okay, well, if Ozzy played that idol, then at the merge feast, there's going to be a clue. So I tore, because the idol would be back in play, so I tore that place upside down. I looked under every mat. People were eating and socializing, and I was playing the game. I was sitting there, reaching under salami, passing salami, looking under, getting the mask, looking at the bucket. I looked for that hidden immunity idol clue at the merge speed like a madman, and I found none. So that gave me the confidence to then go to somebody and say, I know you're lying. And so I looked on their tribe, talked to Cochran, saw him sleeping by himself, saw everybody sleeping with blankets and pillows except Cochran. And I said, that's the guy. Good pick, Bob. So I started talking to him. I really like intelligent people. He was very intelligent. So we started talking. I really, really liked him. I still like him. I talk to him. I keep in contact with him. He's a great guy. Lasting, long life friendship out of that. And, you know, I just started watching. I said, that's going to be the guy. Sophie was like, I want to talk. So, Sophie said, well, I'll talk to somebody. And I said, nope, don't anybody talk to anybody. And then Brandon was like, Brandon said, I'll go talk to him. I'm going to talk to him. He's going to be my friend. He's like, started trying to chum it up. I said, you guys don't blow it. I got it. So I got Cochran. You know, we started talking. And then finally, you know, I was like, well, I know you're the agent that's sent to turn us. Well, let's talk, man. And so he gave his little spiel. And then I said, all right. I said, I appreciate that. I respect it. But now I'm going to tell you what's really going on. And I laid it out for him. I drew the line in the sand. But the thing was is that, you know, they were still in control. They had Immunity Idol Plus. They won double immunity that day. And but I just told Cochran, I said, look, you're playing with a bunch of bullies. You want to play with a bunch of assholes for the rest of this game, or do you want to actually enjoy this game? And so I think me mentoring him had a lot to do with him flipping and not just me saying, hey, strategically, this is what you guys are doing. And me showing that, hey, you know what? I really care about you. I really like you as a person. Play with honorable people. Play with people that you're going to have fun playing with. And he said, you know, in fact, that the time that he spent with us was so much better than the time that he spent with everybody else, you know, before the merge, that I think it was worth it. I was sad that I voted him out. I wish that, you know, I could have taken him further, but I would have faced a lot of criticism saying these are the five that are going to get to the end and not taking those five.
Okay, now I think, because that's the next thing we really want to ask about, is it seems like this bond with Cochran becomes very, very solid, and he does in fact end up flipping over to your side, which gives you fully the numbers and gives you the opportunity now to start picking off as many Savai'i as you want. And it seems like at this point, and this is, Coach, I'll tell you, this is right when we actually began doing this podcast, doing weekly Survivor recaps, and we would come on and talk each week about what each person should be or could be or whatever is happening. And we would talk about your position in the game, saying, well, maybe Coach should be considering the idea of keeping Cochran and keeping Edna and Rick and Brandon, and maybe now turning the tables on Sophie, even though they were in that part of that five group, just because it seems like at the end, those people are all going to be far more loyal and simultaneously probably easier to beat. And now I'm thinking that there are probably some assumptions we were making based on the edit that you do not agree with in that, and I'm curious what they are.
Well, here's the thing, you know, I was in the alliance and I said almost daily, I've made a contract with you guys. If you lie to me, that contract will be revoked, which is what happened to Austin when I gave him my word. I revoked that contract. And so I told everybody that, and I kept pounding it into them. So I couldn't very well go back on my word and let somebody lie to me. Now, there were times that I felt that people lied to me. Brandon lied to me in the very beginning about the Michaela thing. So to me, I could revoke that contract when I needed to. Albert was getting squirrely, pandering jury votes, making plans with everybody else. I felt like there was a way that I could get out of that contract. But the truth of the matter was, this was Redemption Island. I could have taken Cochran and Edna, but in that final challenge, Ozzy would have beaten all three of us. And so I knew that I needed to keep people around that had a chance of beating him. It's why I voted out Rick when I did, because I knew Rick was one of the worst challenge guys out there. He had no chance of beating Ozzy in that final four. And that was like our main MO, because we got down to six and seven. We knew 99% certain that Ozzy was going to come off off of Redemption, and none of us wanted him in the final three. So, you know, that was a big part of my thought. And when people lied to me, I could vote them off, but I wanted Sophie around for challenges. I wanted Albert around for challenges. I wanted Brandon around until the last minute for challenges as well. And, you know, hindsight's 2020. Would I have done it differently? Probably not. But I will tell you this. I was thinking about this when I watched the final tribal council of 25. If Ozzy would have made it to the end, I would have beaten him. And nobody's going to believe that. You guys aren't going to believe it. But I'll tell you right now, if I would have voted off Albert that one, that last time, and it would have been me, Sophie, and Ozzy in the final three. Albert would have voted for me. Cochran would have voted for me. Penda would have voted for me. Rick would have voted for me. And Albert would have straightened Brandon out, and Brandon would have voted for me, and I would have walked away with $1 million. And so in hindsight, I wish I would have done that. But by the time final tribal council came around, there was nothing that I could have done to change the jury's mind because Ozzy and Brandon together had poisoned the jury.
Well, let's talk about actually now a couple of things, just backing up briefly. So am I to interpret that if there were no Redemption Island and Ozzy had just been voted off, say, at the merge or any of the other times you've gotten voted off, that you would have then acted differently and probably gone towards to the end with Rick or Edna or Brandon instead of Sophie and Albert if you don't have to have Ozzy to be concerned about?
You're correct. If there had not been a Redemption Island, I would have said, okay, you know what, Brandon, you lied to me, you're gone. Boom, voted him out. I would and kept Cochran. And then I would have said, Albert, you're getting squirrely. You made other plans with other people. Boom, you're gone. And we all agreed that when we got to the final five, the gloves were going to come off, and then all the bets were off. So, you know, I would have then gotten to the finals with Sophie, Rick, and Cochran, and the three of us would have picked them off, and I would have probably sat next to those two. Not because I was going against my strongest to the end theme, not because I thought those two were ghosts and I could beat them, but because I genuinely liked those people and I genuinely thought that they had been so loyal to me, how could I possibly in my heart vote them off? Yes, of course, part of it would have been that I would have won, but you have to remember that once we got down to the final eight, I felt like I could have beaten anybody. I felt like it'd be Albert, Sophie, Rick, Brandon. I felt like I could beat Edna, Cochran. So for me, I really thought I had the game won the last 20 days.
Okay. So one of the more memorable events of the season is Brandon's boot. And this, like, the editor did a great job of this episode painting this as some big internal moral struggle on your part. Can you tell us a bit about how that actually went down and how you ended up making that decision?
Oh, voting Brandon out. That's a great question. So Albert was going home that night. Albert had gotten to the point of being so squirrely that we all wanted him gone, and he was going home. And I told Brandon, do not give up your immunity necklace. And he was like, Coach, I feel like I need to. I feel like I need to. And I told him point blank, if you do this, you're going home. Don't do it. He was like, Coach, I got you. And I begged him not to. And when he said, I'm going to. He was like, you need to do the right thing. And vote off. I forgot who he was saying that we should vote off. And I said, I can't do that. And he was like, do it, do it, do it. And then finally I said, all right, I'm going to pray about it. So I prayed about it, and I really did feel like, you know, I mean, I know people don't want to put religion into it, but I prayed about it, and I thought, you know, he's going home. And I told him he was going home, so it was his own fault for going home. And that's how that all happened.
Do you think that in doing that, because you mentioned now Brandon, of course, having then going on to potentially poison the jury against you, and I think even perhaps that act in general may have soured the jury's opinion of you, And we talked at some length about how perhaps there are times in Survivor where it's not necessarily even the best move or the easiest move to make, but it would just so screw a player over with the jury to do anything otherwise that it would be stupid basically to do anything otherwise. Do you feel like that might have been the one big move that cost you the game?
No, definitely not. I think that, you know, when you look at that, that move in itself really didn't affect my game, okay? It didn't affect my game because who got the most flack for that? It was Albert. At the final tribal, people weren't saying, Coach, you voted out Brandon after he gave Albert the necklace. Nobody mentioned that, but they mentioned quite a few times, Albert, did you know he was going home? And Albert was like, I don't understand the question. Can you repeat the question? And they were like, Brandon was like, no, Albert, did you know I was going home that night when I gave you the necklace? And Albert was like, you know, I don't really know what you're asking, but I felt comfortable that you were going to be around or something like that. And they called him on it. So, I mean, that move really hurt Albert. That move didn't hurt me. What hurt me was this. Ozzy is a glory hog who could not stand the fact that he was not in the final tribal. And he felt like I betrayed him because I gave him my word that I wanted to go to the final three with him. And so that, if Brandon had just been there and it had been Albert and Brandon off and me, Sophie, and Ozzy in the end, it wouldn't have hurt. But Brandon got voted off and literally fell in love with Ozzy. I mean, Brandon was like, I don't drink, I don't do drugs, and all of a sudden he's smoking a fat one with Ozzy when he gets voted off. He's drinking with Ozzy, he's getting tattoos with Ozzy. Ozzy's like his best friend, he's like sucking off of Ozzy's tit. And that's what happened, is that Ozzy got so pissed that he wasn't in the finals that he said, we're gonna hang Coach out to dry. And he stood up and pontificated about, oh, honor and integrity. Now, if I were to do it over again, I would have not said the words honor and integrity for the last 20 days. And a friend of mine made a really good point. He's actually the coach of the coach. His name is Jeff Balzone. He's the guy that told me, meet people where they're at. Don't pigeonhole them into taking this great adventure with them. If they're out there for the fame, relate to that. If they're out there for the money, relate to that. If they're going through a midlife crisis, relate to that. And so he told me when it was all said and done that he just cringed every time he heard me say those words. Because he said, if you're out there and if you're living with honor and integrity, you don't have to preach it so much. In fact, by preaching it so much, you devalue that and cause it question. In real life, you wouldn't go up and say, hey guys, by the way, I'm living life with honor and integrity. You just wouldn't say that. And so I would have just dropped those two words. For me, it was this safety blanket. It was this Linus's, sleeping blanket of security that I would say as a mantra every day to reassure myself and those around me that everything was copacetic. But I did say it way too much, and it became something that they could have hung me up on.
Yeah, what went into that offer that you made to Ozzy? Like, what were your intentions there?
What were my intentions when I made a pact with the devil? Is that what you just said?
in so many words, yeah. Take a
shot. I'm going to tell you, I wanted to be in the final three. And when we were out there on redemption, the same spell, I fell under the same spell that everybody else fell under, and that is Ozzy's showing us his place, giving us his papaya, and being a really nice guy because he doesn't have to play the game. And, I kind of fell under that spell, and I really felt for him. And if you get off, then I will, go with you to the end, because I was fed up with Albert, and I was fed up with, Brandon, fed up with Brandon. And so and in my own mind, I thought, I will go to the end, and I will beat him. But when Ozzy got off of redemption, I told him, I said, I'm going to tell you some things that I don't want you to share with anybody else. I'm going to tell you some things I don't want you to share with anybody else. And he went and told everybody. And that was his downfall. So initially, I just wanted to be in that final three, and I wanted to hedge my bet. But as I was at redemption, I felt sorry for him, and I really wanted to play the game to the end with him, thinking that I could beat him. But unfortunately, he came off and just started running his mouth. And that was the end of it.
What are your thoughts on Sophie's winner? Because we didn't talk that much about your relationship with her, but we interviewed her, and from what she said, the two of you were very tight throughout. So I'm curious what you thought about her at the time through the game and now, in retrospect, having lost to her.
I like Sophie. She was smart. She was a bitch. She was a good competitor. And she was very introverted. But I really liked her. And it seemed that when Albert was getting squirrely and Edna was getting needy and, you know, Rick was being a non-entity. Sophie and I could sit down in a little spot, I still remember it, and we could strategize about the game as two rational adults that were really thinking along the same lines. And her and I really thought the same the whole game. Sophie was a pleasure to play with. I think that she got a little bit of a bum rap from me because I really felt like I deserved to win. She checked out of the game for about 14 days. It was an anniversary of somebody's death back home. We gave her space. She went down on the beach and cried and sunned herself and didn't work around camp for about maybe 10 days, 10 to 14 days. And that was right after the MERS. So she was such a horrible social player. I thought there's no way she'd win. So I brought that out in my exit interviews and probably gave her a little bit of a bum rap because I wanted to win so bad and I was disappointed that she won. I actually felt Albert also got a bum rap in that final tribal because he was a very deserving player. He was good in the challenges early on. He lost a lot of weight and so wasn't good in the challenges later on. But he was a smart guy and he and I saw eye to eye on a lot of things as well. So I thought he kind of got a bum rap. But I like playing the game with Sophie. I just don't think that she deserved to win that game. And anybody on the jury could tell you now that they know that the deserving player didn't win, especially when they saw everything that I had done. I mean, when you look at Jim, Keith, Whitney, and Dawn, they're non-entities. They literally didn't know me. And yet they all voted for Sophie because Ozzy told them to. And so just... again, unfortunate circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Now, actually, I'm sorry, Coach. We know you were very short on time. One thing that I took note of early when we were talking about it, as you were going through very, in general terms, each of your three seasons, you seemed very excited when thinking back about season 23 that, you know, everyone, you got to be the leader and people listened to you and everything. Did you get what you hoped for out of your whole Survivor experience having it end like that?
It was the most magical experience that you could ever imagine. And if I were to go back in the beginning, before I went on Token Gene and said, here's what I want to do. Here's who I want to be. Here's how I want to be edited. And I would have written a script for the producers of Survivor. I could not have written it half as well as how it ended up being written. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. To quote Charles Dickens in A Tale of Two Cities, it was something that just will be with me for the rest of my life. And I get actually choked up thinking about talking about it right now and just what an amazing experience and how blessed I've been to be able to be a part of something so incredible. And it was an amazing experience, and I think that I got everything, except for $1 million, everything that I wished for out of the experience. And ending on such a high note of being the leader and having people listen to me and making a difference in the game and getting to the end was pretty amazing.
Yeah, Coach, I think we would all certainly, as viewers agree, and as interviewers and listeners, thank you very, very much for taking the time today. I think the one last question that needs to be asked now is, we heard a lot about South Pacific being your third and final time playing. Is that still the case, or are these fond memories going to bring you back for one more time?
Well, like all the greats, you can never say never on retirement, but I think you've seen the last of Coach in this capacity. I've filmed pilots and working on a TV show of my own that I'm going to host. It depends a lot on that, obviously. If that gets picked up by a network in January, then you won't see me on Survivor again. But, you know, you never know. When they make that phone call, it's such an adrenaline rush just to get the phone call to say that you're being considered that I'd never say never. You know, I mean, I really enjoyed my time out there, and it would be hard to say no to a fourth time, but we'll see what happens.
All right, Dom, do we have anything else to add to ask Coach before we wrap this up?
No, I don't think we do. On the personal note, Coach, thank you for doing this with us. I know there have been a lot of interruptions and stuff, and it took more of your time than you're planning. And thanks to Andrew for setting this up. I hope we repaid the faith that both of you put in us.